I am all in.
More, more, more. I want to kiss you more.
All In with Scott Patterson, an iHeartRadio podcast.
All right. Hey, everybody. Scott Patterson, I Am All In podcast. Welcome back. Let's get right into Kill Me Now.
This is episode 3, Kill Me Now. Air date October 19th, 2000. Rory goes golfing with her grandfather and surprisingly has a good time. At Lorelei's Inn, a wedding is stressing everyone out.
My initial thoughts... Emily Gilmore, wow. What a puppet master, right?
I agree.
Brilliant woman.
Oof. You really learn that she is controlling things because Richard was surprisingly hesitant to play golf.
Yes, he was.
Was like, you will do this and you will make it great and make sure she has dessert.
He wanted lunch. He wanted no part of it at all. And man,
why do you think that was? Like, why did he initially not want to hang out with his granddaughter?
I don't know. I just think he probably knew that it was going to cause a lot of stress with Lorelei and it would get back to her. And then she would, talk to Richard about it. And he just wanted to go play golf with his buddies. And cackle and have a beer and have a cocktail and have a nice lunch and shoot the breeze. And, he didn't want to do that. He's not used to it. He's not in the flow of the family thing. I mean, he's so settled into his, it's just me and Emily and they've ignored us for all these years. And so those feelings get very hardened right over time. So now he's got to open up all of a sudden and like share his sacred free time away from Emily. With the granddaughter, and it's like, oh God, it's like for him, it's opening up a can of worms.
That's a great point. He had to do something uncomfortable.
Right.
And like the golf club that he was a part of was very hoity-toity, mm-hmm. like you can tell. Mm-hmm. And bringing in your granddaughter who has never played golf before. Right. You saw in those first couple of takes at the golf course where she's just hitting the ground divots. And the grass is flying up and he was huge mortified.
There's nothing worse, by the way. And I have been a member of a hoity-toity golf club, country club, and there's nothing worse than playing with somebody who can't play. Not saying I'm an A player at all, but when you have somebody like taking up the turf like that, you're like, oh, this is going to be a long, slow day. Slow day.
This episode is so important because of that golf, Rory and Richard fully bond, and that becomes essential to the rest of the series.
Right, right.
Because this is where he realizes she's smart, they have so much in common, and she is very drawn to him, and they become so connected. Mm-hmm. Which causes all kinds of problems with Lorelei.
Right. So it's about control, right? It's about who's going to control the video here. Is it going to be Emily or is it going to be Lorelei? And it's like, you got to do what's best for your kid. And that came, Lorelei came around to that. She realized this was going to be ultimately beneficial for her and that she was going to have to suffer through this and just swallow her ego, and let Emily mm-hmm. win. And what was the great line?
When they're fighting about their boobs?
With the irrational anger.
Can I say boobs? I don't know. They might have to bleep.
I think you just did. What do you mean? It's not can you? You can. Hilarious. It's like may you. May right. you. May you say may boobs. But I know I can't. I never would. And I don't.
But yeah, that was major. They had that big old fight.
Yes. Yes. And it's the fear of losing your daughter. It's the fear of losing, that closeness. I mean, there might be a bit of an unhealthy aspect to that mother-daughter relationship. Mm. I mean, if we really want to psychoanalyze it, it's like if you're that close, I mean, is it choking? Is it choking, Alexis? Is it too much?
Right. And who's the mom and who's the daughter? Because a lot of times Rory mm-hmm. has the clear head and mm-hmm. is sort of...
Right. Right. So ultimately she was well raised, but is it too much of a, too much of a cage she's put her in. Is it too much?
Two friends instead of mother-daughter.
Right.
You also realize that Emily, we started to talk about this, is totally in control.
Mm-hmm.
One, she says to Richard, you will go, you will do this. And remember when Lorelai goes into the, like whatever that side room is on the Friday night dinner, and Emily convinces Lorelai that the golf is the right thing. Mm-hmm. And it worked.
Yep.
So Emily really, like you said, is the puppet master.
Yeah.
She's got everybody either doing what she wants or doing the right thing, unclear, mm-hmm. which it is.
Mm-hmm. And it ultimately, and both women are displaying an extraordinary level of selfishness, but like who's got Rory's best interest at heart ultimately? And I think it's Emily, and I think she wins that round. I mean, let's give it to her because that is the best thing for her. And mm-hmm. all families go through this, especially when there's grandkids, right? And there's maybe some tension between the husband or the wife and one parent, and there's bitterness and resentment going back and it hasn't been resolved, and it gets on the kid and the grandkid, and oh my God. It's just a circle jerk at that point. Everybody goes through this. This is every family, which is why the show is so appealing. This is universally experienced through all families. And it's just, you know, the way they do it on Gilmore Girls is especially satisfying because it is mm-hmm. so clearly mapped out. It's so, you know, you can really feel the beats. You can, not so much you can anticipate it, but man, it is so rife with humor. What was the line that Lorelai had that was so funny in the kitchen? She says, what are you, Bob Barker? It's like, what are you trying to win? Like, what's going on?
Emily says, if Rory goes and has a great time with you, then I win.
Right.
And Lorelai says, okay, Bob Barker.
Yeah.
So let's quickly, before we move on from this scene, this is where the mistake happens. They talk about Lorelai the first. And you could interpret that she has passed away. They say was like three times.
Huh.
But we know, those of us that have seen it or were there, that Mrs. Cunningham later plays grandma, great grandma, whatever you want to call her, Lorelai the
mm-hmm.
first.
Mm-hmm.
Marion Ross, who to many people is known as Mrs. Cunningham.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Here's the question for you. Is it a mistake, or do they later change their mind when they're writing and they realize, oh, hey, you know what? We should have Marion Ross come in and play Richard's mother. And we've got this whole storyline with her. And do they sort of just like hope people forgot what happened in episode one?
I think it's the latter. Yeah. I think that it's like, it's, you know, what are we going to get out of this? We're going to get so much more out of a Marion Ross coming on than, you know, some fans being a little irked at.
Right. A couple Reddit threads where people are like, what the?
Right. Because there's so much, it just deepens the show and gives it so much more dimension. I mean, it's like the Kirk thing, right? It's like he didn't have a name. It's like Amy trying to figure out where he fits in and how he fits in, you know, and Lorelai referring to him as the go help that guy over there. Not Mick, not Kirk, just that guy over there. So, yeah, I think in the beginning you get forgiven. You get forgiven a little bit at the beginning because they obviously felt, and we all felt, it was going to be a long run anyway. So it's like, what the hell? Just go for it.
Mm-hmm. You know what else you realize in this episode is how good Lorelai is at her job.
Yes.
With that wedding with the twins on the twins.
Yes.
And I think that I would assume that's intentional because you really realize, man, she's a pro at this. Yeah. Even the super salad. Let's have both. Like, she's putting out fires, you know, and solving all those problems.
Yeah.
What's your take on that, Scott?
I think that's where her breeding, okay, that's where her DNA kicks in, because that's where she's more familiar, because that's what she's used to, and that's what she grew up with, the country club. She knows what great service is. She knows, because she's demanded it, and she's seen mm-hmm. Richard and Emily demand it when she was a child. Can you imagine somebody coming, like Richard asking for a drink at the country club, give me a scotch on ice, and the kid brings it without the ice, and Richard going, excuse me, you know what I mean? And then the kid brings him a glass of ice, and then Richard says, excuse me. So it's breeding. So she's not in her comfort zone raising a child. She's figuring it out. But with the inn, no, that comes naturally.
There was also this scene when they were at the dinner table and there's this awkward exchange with the maid that was taking care of them. And she said, oh, it's my new cook, Mira, who turns out to really be Sarah. But Emily misheard the name. And it just becomes established that Emily goes through many cooks and maids often. So that kind of was like a big red flag for me. I was like, ooh, there's something there.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's, they demand snap a finger kind of service and don't screw it up or you're gone. And you can't know it unless you've grown up that way.
Because when the mother of the twins mm-hmm. is like worried about this, worried about this, worried about this. And Lorelai just has it solved, has it solved, has it solved.
Yeah.
You're like, wow, she runs this inn
right.
like a boss.
Right. She's a classy, educated, well, somewhat educated, very, very intelligent, well-bred person who has made some choices that run counter to her upbringing, mm-hmm. right? And that's mm-hmm. the show.
Another perspective, I think, is it's the one thing Lorelai can control.
Ooh.
Like, she can't control Rory. Mm-hmm. She can't control Emily. Mm-hmm. So all these things at the inn is something that she can control. And right. that's why she's so good at
yeah.
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And what a great, who was the actress that played that? Was it Mrs. Scales?
Megan Fay.
Wow.
The mom of the twins?
Yes.
Yeah.
She was yeah. brilliant. And a perfect counter to Lauren. And sending up... And being so on it where I will send you somebody up for a massage that looks amazingly similar to Antonio Banderas. There you go.
I mean, like music I know we talk about this every week, how dense these episodes are. Yes. There isn't 30 seconds wasted on
right.
this show.
Right. All right, let's take a quick break, gang. When we come back, we'll talk about the club. Okay, we're back. We're talking about the country club, the very Tony, very expensive monthly fees and huge initiation fee in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. You know.
So what kept going through my mind was how rich are the Gilmores?
You know, I think his stock options are probably, I mean, back then, I mean, 100 million, 50 million. I've had some, you know, I have friends that are CEOs and ex-CEOs of big, big corporations and they're doing a couple million a year in salary. It's not really the salary, right? The salary's good, right? And maybe up to 5 million a year in salary, but it's the stock options.
Well, and Richard, I don't think grew up struggling. It seems like no. there was family money and family right. money on family money.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So.
Okay. So the club, what did you think of the scenes at the club? Specifically, I'm obsessed with the steam room.
The most odious woman in the world, not just at the club. I mean, that's the funniest part of it. Cause when she rolled up and I thought, oh, here's something. That's why Richard didn't want to go. Maybe there's something going on here. You know, maybe he didn't want to be disturbed or found out that he was maybe having somewhat of an emotional affair with somebody else, you know, because
but no,
it of course you can't do that to that character. You'd lose respect for him. So
I liked that Richard bonded with Rory over the, you know, her travels to Fez mm-hmm. and books, mm-hmm. but also her sort of gossipy stories about what was going on. He really was on her level. Mm-hmm. And I think all of a sudden you realize these two are besties now.
And what he probably doesn't realize and doesn't want to admit because he's still angry is that Lorelai probably did a heck of a job raising her. Mm. Good job. She knows, she's aware, she's literate, she's reading the right books. You know, she's saying the right thing. She's a very proper young lady and very respectful. She can't play, who cares? But that's... You know, he's going to have to admit to himself at some point and he can play against that. And that's gold for actors is that maybe Lorelai isn't such a screw up. I mean, if you can raise a daughter that's that spectacular, you did something right. You know, that just doesn't happen. You know?
Yeah, that's a great point.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, yeah, what is your take seeing that relationship between Richard and Rory? Like, how important is what we're seeing develop?
Well, I think it's important for both of them. I think it's it enriches Rory's life. It gives her a father figure. I mean, somewhat of a father figure that isn't Luke. And it's a man that is her blood that she can trust, who has mm-hmm. her best interests at heart. And that could really, you know, affect some very positive changes within her, which I think we see immediately in the conflict with Lorelai, that fight, actually.
Well, and he calls her right away at the
right,
inn.
Right, right.
Which is a hilarious line. Right. Yes, I don't know how many people call you dad when Lorelai answers. But right, he never called the inn and calls Rory.
It's like, why would anybody admit that they're your father?
And then at the very end, you see the three of them go into the library to look at the books, mm-hmm. and Lorelai is left in the...
Yeah.
I don't know what room that is. The living room or the sitting room?
That's the living room. Yeah, that's... Okay. Yeah, that's the main living room. Yeah, we shot a lot. We shot a good amount in the revival in that living room. It's a very large area. And I think, you know, and the cooler... Alexis was, the cooler Rory was in that fight scene, the boob scene. The angrier she got, Lorelai got, mm-hmm. and it also shows that on a certain level that Rory is far more mature than her mother. So therein lies that dynamic and that conflict too, because I mean, she just was very cool about it, very matter of fact about it. And she wasn't, and there's nothing diabolical about it. She wasn't even thinking about how it affected Lorelai personally, right? How she must mm-hmm. be feeling, because mm-hmm. who thinks that way?
Right.
Who on earth thinks that way? So it's that dysfunction, that fractured relationship with her parents that is, you know, providing all of the fuel for this. And the Paladinos really cashed in on that. I mean, that is just like the nuclear fuel of the show.
Was anyone else surprised that Rory was late for the golf date?
But you know what? I'll bet you that was a Lorelai attempt at sabotage.
Like, and it gave Richard some funny lines, like when he said it was cooler at 8. But I was surprised that she was late.
Yeah, I mean, it's typical, right? It's like, oh, I didn't set the alarm and sorry. And maybe you'll just can't go. You'll miss it. And he'll leave because he's not going to miss his tea time, right? You don't miss your tea time at places like that. You don't make people wait.
I was just about to say that. Yeah. You can't miss your tea time if you're late. Nope, you don't got it.
Nope. Yeah, you forfeit it. And so that was an attempt to sabotage that wasn't scripted, but it's implied. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, should we dig into Jackson and Suki for a second?
Sure, let's
Danielle
do it.
Danielle has some thoughts.
I thought that debacle was probably like my favorite part of the episode. Like, I love seeing Suki and Jackson fight over the strawberries and the blueberries. And at the very end, Suki got her way with the strawberries. I just loved all of it. I thought it was fantastic.
To put an exclamation point on that and to have... Suki go after him down the street. I mean, that is wacky Stars Hollow, harmless little Hamlet at its finest. That is as dangerous as it gets there. I mean, that just defines what Stars Hollow is. It was a perfect scene.
I love that because of the strawberry debacle, mm-hmm. it tees up the fact that it's blueberry shortcake that then Rory and Lorelai bring over to Emily says, you brought me used
blueberry shortcake.
And then Lorelai goes, no, it's leftover dessert. As if there's a difference.
You brought me used cake.
You brought me leftovers.
Like, that is the genius, that if there wasn't that, we wouldn't have the bit at the end that makes you laugh.
But that was intentional. That was intentional. That was like,
I'm sure
that was not her lack of breeding. It was like, deal with it. I don't like you.
Right.
You want, yeah, here you go. There you go. It's just so funny. It's so funny. Oh, that was that may be one of the funniest moments of the entire thing. That entire episode. That was fantastic. What else can we get into?
So the twins on twins. This is the crazy thing. So we've learned in television there's like an A plot line, there's like a B plot line, and a C plot line. So with like the A would be the golf and the father, the grandfather, granddaughter. Sure. Then the B is the twins on twins. And you've got this ridiculous wedding and the whole thing. And then the C would be maybe the strawberry controversy. But the thing that's so amazing about this show is they're all tied together.
Well, when you have that many characters, you pretty much have to create multiple storylines, or else, you know, what are you going to do with them? And you've got so many of these great actors and these great characters that were created for this reason. You know, not to utilize them is a crime, but when they're that distinct, when the voices are that distinct, it's kind of easy to develop storylines. If you just think in terms of Stars Hollow, like how can we make a wacky, funny thing? And imagine how much fun Amy and Dan had creating the blueberry versus strawberry thing. And then the chasing down the street at the end of it. I mean, it's just like,
exactly.
You know, they're roaring with laughter developing that stuff, because that's the fun of writing. It's like collaborating with your partner who happens to be your husband or your wife and making this funny stuff.
Well, can you talk about that? Because on one end, we have this very serious stuff, you know, essentially the relationship between Emily and Lorelai and Rory is very serious and emotional. Then you have these two other things that are completely outlandish and over the top of the twins marrying twins with the mother that sort of can't stand her twin daughters. And then Jackson and Suki brawling over the strawberries. It's like they go outlandish.
So
where in another show, right, you might be like, that's over the top and wacky.
No, but that's what makes the drama portion of it so powerful. Because when you return to that, you know, but there's still an element of wacky in Emily Lorelai. There's all those little lines, all those little funny lines, but it's so much more fraught with conflict, right? And it's always so well placed, because the one thing that I know about screenwriting and not so much about television is that if you're going to put a scene of conflict, a dialogue-y scene of conflict, not an action scene, but a dialogue-y scene, if you're going to talk conflict, it's got to be late in the second act, and it's got to be extreme conflict, and that propels it into the third act. And they do that very well in this show. And I think television is broken up into, I don't know, 5 or 6 acts. I know I never wrote it. I wrote screenplays, but I never wrote television series. I don't understand the dynamic of it, the structure of it. It's a different structure, but there are similarities. But those are the big moments in the kitchen when they're going at it, and it's really serious. That's when you can do it. You do it kind of 2/3 into the piece, or 2/3 into the hour. So about 40 minutes, you do it, 45 minutes. But yeah, you can't have that impact. So it can't hit so hard unless you have the wacky. And that's the beauty of the show. Because you know you're going to get the comic relief after. You know you're going to get the buildup after. So you're just sort of playing with everybody's emotions. And you're giving them all of these laughs and all these wacky characters. And it's all harmless, harmless, harmless. So it seems so much more pronounced, so much more serious between mother and daughter when they're really going at it. And they're both lions, right? I mean, these two women are not backing down, and they're really delivering big shots. So let's put it in boxing terminology. You get that 1-2 punch with Emily and Lorelai, and then the punches keep coming with all those 30 other characters, and it's overwhelming. Yeah. I mean, it's just like, it's a joy. It's a joy to watch. I mean, if you were be happy if somebody were beating you, but maybe a bad analogy. Let's think of something else besides sports. So, but that's really the point. It's like they know structure. They know where to put the scenes of the most conflict, and they know how to set them up, because all that other stuff is just set up. It's set up.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say window dressing. It's not. That would be insulting. It's just color. It's there's so many different colors to this canvas. So there you go. All right, everybody, we're back. It's Scott Patterson with I Am All In podcast on iHeart. We are joined by the illustrious Valerie Campbell, who worked in the wardrobe department on Gilmore Girls. So your forte on Gilmore Girls, as you have stated before, is less about fashion and more about the behind-the-scenes stuff and what it was like working on the show. And you took care of the actors on the set, and there was And from there, season one, episode 10 until the very end, including the reboot, where you were the costume supervisor. And you were responsible for breaking down the scripts and hiring crew, making a budget, making sure everything in the costume department happened. So tell us a little bit about how you got the job and what the experience was like.
Well, you remember Brenda. Brenda was our costume designer towards the end from season three on.
Of course.
She called me up one day and she said, "Hey, Valerie, I got this show I want you to help me on. It's called Gilmore Girls." But I swear to God, I thought she said Gibson Girls, which is more of a relation to like a period film. And I'm like thinking, oh, it's a period film. And I'm looking at the TV guide, and I think it was the golf episode with Richard that was in the TV guide. And I'm like, huh? And then I get to set and I'm like, this is not a period film.
No way. Now, you mentioned the golf episode. That was the first time I got to work with Rich, with Ed. First time I
no,
I
actually that golf episode.
Oh, not that one.
It was when Rory took him golfing. Oh,
okay, right, okay.
So, but yeah, do you remember in the golf episode? And it might have been your episode, or it might have been the time that he took Chris golfing. Mm-hmm. There was a medic off in the distance, and they swung a golf. Ed swung his thing. And it went off. He says four, and it hits the set medic in the head, and she ended up getting a head injury that day.
Oh, no.
And it went through this, like, she was sitting behind the lattice work.
Right.
Because everybody was hiding, because it was like, you saw everything.
Oh, boy.
And that couldn't I have photos. I mean, I still have all my photos from continuity from
right,
the show.
Right, so. Right. That couldn't
like,
have felt.
I remember
that,
it,
that,
everything.
That could not have felt good. He was a big, powerful guy, you know. My
yeah,
God. Oh,
no.
Boy. Wow. I hope she's
he
okay.
He felt so bad. But she was all right. She was all right. She just,
good.
You know, it luckily was buffered a little, but for it to go through where she was sitting.
Right.
Was crazy.
Right. So the thing that I marveled at the most, and I think the toughest job on the reboot, especially, was keeping all of those costumes organized because we were block shooting. I mean, we would shoot.
Yeah.
I mean, describe that experience because we had to shoot four different episode costumes in one day sometimes,
you know,
right?
Unlike the original show, we had all the scripts.
Right.
So we knew exactly what was going on. Whereas when we shot the original, we'd get the script like as we were shooting the first.
So you had a better chance to prep on the.
Yeah. So
reboot.
We had a lot of prep time, but. The big problem was casting. They wouldn't cast everyone until, I mean, I'd be on the phone at 10 o'clock at night talking to Jamie going, "Jamie, can you please give me like a hint as to who you're casting for tomorrow?" And sometimes, and then the person would like, it would come in and I would call them and I'm like, "Bring whatever you have in your closet because I can't go anywhere.
Right, the stores are closed.
And we would have to run around getting stuff. But, you know, we broke down the scripts, got it, hired the crew. But the most amazing thing was walking in the costume department my first day on the revival. And I don't know if you remember, but inside there was the wall of everyone's headshots.
Sure.
And I walked in and I was just like, oh, my God, this is weird. And then seeing Lauren on the back lot, you just walk her and we would both just be like, this is so weird.
It is, I know. I mean, it just
it was so much fun.
Yeah, they really, you know, I don't know if the fans know this. I'm sure they've read about it, but that set on the reboot was extra special. I mean, there was, I think, you know, there was more, there was just, I think, more money involved there. And they built they built this magical set. I mean, even Luke's diner was popping with color and they had spongy floors because I guess the sound department, you know, said, "Hey, you know, we have to do a lot of ADR and loop a lot of the lines because of the creaky floor." So they put in a spongy floor and it was really nice to work in there because
that's interesting.
It's good on my back.
I didn't get a chance to hang out on set like I did in the original because the original, I was there 24/7 every moment you guys were shooting. And so I was stuck in the office and I'd walk into set and I'd have like the memory of what it was like. Mm-hmm. And then I'd walk in and I'm like, oh, that's different. Like the entire structure of like Lorelai's house was set up slightly different.
Right.
Ed's house, you know, the Gilmore house became bigger, a little bit bigger, and they added a couple rooms. And
right.
But it was wild how close everything was.
Yeah.
And the most amazing memory was walking in to the Gilmore mansion and seeing the painting.
Yes.
I don't know if you walked in there at all, but.
Yeah, I did. You know, I had some scenes in there. It was powerful.
Took my breath away.
Yeah.
It made me, I was crying. Like, I mean, just silently crying, but mm-hmm. I was crying because Ed and I were, we were really close friends. Mm-hmm. We would, I mean, we hung out years after, and I even like a month before had gotten an email from him because we'd have these parties and I'd invite him to the parties. And he was like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm going to not be able to make it. I had no idea he was about to pass or very close to,
yeah.
you know, at the time. And I felt so bad. I didn't know until they called me a couple of days before he passed mm-hmm. and I was just in shock. Right. I was like, oh my God.
Right. Right.
It was special.
So let's do some questions. Okay.
Yeah.
And we call this a little rapid fire. So I'm going to just fire them at you. So just give me your first impressions and memories of the following. Alexis.
Oh, just so sweet. I remember her little dog. She'd always bring it to set towards mm-hmm. the end mm-hmm. and she was just so shy and
yep. Okay, here
sweet.
We go. Next one, Lauren.
Lauren, so smart. I mean, memory like a steel trap. She could hear something once and repeat it back like she had no problem.
Sean Gunn.
Oh, man, his jobs, all the jobs that he did was so crazy. His hot dog one.
Right. We just talked to him. We did the hot dog.
Yeah. Aw, he's lovely.
Keiko.
Keiko, her glasses. There was an episode where she didn't have her glasses on. We had to reshoot the scene.
Oh, God, the whole thing?
It was with Liza. It was at Yale.
I guess she was happy. Liza was happy, huh? Jeez. The best work she ever did.
Luckily, now we got to do it again. I mean, but, you know, Liza's such a pro. They actually shot that scene really quickly.
Right.
And it was the first scene back. Steve was directing.
Okay.
Remember Steve Clancy, our Steadicam?
Yes.
Yeah, he was directing.
Oh, that's right. He directed an episode.
It was the first shot back from Christmas.
Right, okay. Wow.
Yeah.
You have a great memory. Dean, Jared, okay. Jared.
There was a scene where he didn't wake up and show up for work that day.
Wow.
And it was all about him. And it was, I think he was with Lindsay at the time. They had just gotten married, I think. And they had to break into his apartment. But he was a sweetheart. I love Jared.
Kids. Luke Danes. Me.
Who?
Me. Luke Danes. Yes, me.
Let's see. I remember you would come to set sometimes randomly when it wasn't your day on. And you would be like taking little cancer patients or people like make a wish and you would give them a tour of Stars Hollow. And I remember that. And I was like, oh, that's so sweet.
Yeah. Those were tough ones, you know, because a lot of those kids didn't make it. So those were tough ones, but, always great to do that. All right. I want to get into a debate, like, you know, in Kill Me Now, I wore denim, right? I wore that denim shirt. I like that denim shirt. And I remember coming to you guys say, why am I not wearing, like in season two or three or four, it's like, why am I not? So what was the deal between the denim and the flannel? Let's get into that a little bit.
I don't, you know what? It's more of a Brenda question.
That's a Brenda.
I've got to say, because I wasn't there when you initially got put in the denim. Mm-hmm. And I just remember you always had plaid. You had your uniform and it was like a uniform. You know, you had your hat. You had your plaid shirt. You had your either a t-shirt or thermal.
Right.
I remember it used to be you just wore thermals under that plaid and you were like, it is getting so hot. Can I just wear a t-shirt? Can I roll my sleeves? Do I have to wear them down? And I'm like, okay, let's figure it out. And you tried to make it a little more comfortable. And then I remember at one point you were like, can I get this a little bit more fitted? I don't really like the fit of this. And so we went through every single plaid shirt you had and you told me which ones you liked.
Right.
You made piles on your on the bed in your trailer.
Right.
I took them away.
Right.
I got rid of the other ones. We just retired them. And I think there was like a moment where you had to wear one of the old ones because there was like,
mm-hmm.
maybe we had to reshoot something like with someone. And so you had to wear it. And I was just like, I'm so sorry.
But the opposite occurred because I was in really good shape back then. And I didn't want to look like I was overweight and was covering. And then when I came back for the reboot, you know, I was like, I think I was asking for oversized shirts because I wanted to cover.
Oh, you wanted oversized
shirts. I kind of wanted the coverage.
Yeah. So we pulled out those old ones from a dead stock.
I do. I remember that. I remember the thermals under, but you had to do it because it's, you know, it's winter, but it's 110 in Burbank. Sure.
Now, I also remember originally you had two hats one day we lost one of them.
What happened?
And we were down to one hat. And I was freaking out because my job as a set customer, first of all, where the hell is the hat? So it must have been like you put it on a chair, the prop guys grabbed the chair, and somehow it went somewhere or someone grabbed it. I mean, there was a lot of thievery at Warner Brothers, like in the back lot. People just walk into those sets and stuff. And so I'm freaking out. And I was like, okay, we got to make you a new hat. And so Brenda was like, I don't have time to find a hat. Or the, you know what? The hats were not the exact same color.
Mm-hmm.
And it had to be exact. So we found fabric. We got it dyed to match. We found a company to make a hat.
Right.
And I was like, I don't usually, that's not really part of my job at that time for that specific part of that episode. And I got handled with doing it because I had lost the hat. Or
right.
I mean, it was the last on my watch.
Right.
And, man, I had that done and I was like, oh, okay. And so now we have 10 hats.
I don't know what could have happened to that original hat. I mean, I have some suspects. Yeah. I'll make some phone calls. I just don't know.
Do you think that you might have taken it? No, you didn't take it.
Not me. I would
No,
never,
you wouldn't have taken
no,
it. But
No, I wouldn't have done that. Anyway, listen. We are so pleased that you could visit. We'd love to have you back down the road. Thank you for coming on. This was great. It was great catching up. And
lovely catching up.
And ladies and gentlemen, one of the very, very important people on the set that pretty much ran that set. I mean, nothing really happens without wardrobe. And if there's a change, or if there's something a little bit off, everything stops, and Valerie and Brenda and
Sesha,
yeah, how's she doing? Yeah. How's she? Is she around?
She's good. She's working on Picard. I'm actually going to go work with her.
Oh, great!
Next week.
Tell her I said hello.
Yeah, I will.
And you guys would come in and save the day. So thank you so much for spending a little time with us, and we'll talk to you soon, Valerie. Thanks for coming on.
Good luck.
Okay, take care. All right.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Hey, everybody. We're going to get into fan questions. We're going to do this every week, so let's get into this. Hi.
Oh,
how you doing? Huh? You're on the podcast.
I'm so excited.
What's your name?
Amber.
Nice to meet you, Amber. I'm Scott. Hello.
Hi, Scott. It is so great to meet you.
It's great meeting you. Where are you right now? Are you?
I am currently in New York.
Oh, gosh. Okay. And you're wearing a Luke sweatshirt. Let me say, is that what I'm saying there?
It's not Luke sweatshirt, but it's a quote.
It's like coffee with my, see?
With my oxygen. I did think about wearing my Luke shirt, I might be pushing it.
Okay. So Amber, you have a question.
What was it like working with Edward Herrmann?
Oh my God. It was great. You know, Ed, he cast, you know, he was such a dynamic figure, in the world of acting, and then when he was on the show, it was like, you're working with this sort of living legend, from his resume, all the work that he's done. And you know, I was aware of him growing up. I'd seen him in a million things. And then when I found out I got the show and it became a series regular eventually, I realized that I was going to be working with a living legend in Ed Herrmann. And I remember that first day working with him in a scene was at his golf course and we went golfing.
Thing.
And it was just this wonderful day. You know, you were off the set, you were at an actual golf course and I was playing golf with Ed Herrmann, and it was a really wonderful experience, a marvelous day.
That's awesome. I bet it was a lot cooler than sitting in those town hall meetings.
Yes, it was. Yeah, they were very hot, sweaty affairs. But yeah, fun to do. A lot of fun. They took a long time, but it was fun to do. Sure.
So whenever you went out for the part of Luke, did they tell you how your character was going to be? Or did you just read the script, kind of know, he's probably a little grumpy and just kind of go with it and stuff? Like, was that just your take on the character? Or did
there wasn't a lot of, in the script, there wasn't a lot of information, descriptive information provided. It was pretty bare, which is good. I mean, that's, you don't really want to read a lot of scenic descriptions when you're reading a script. I mean, a lot of the better scripts don't have that, and they allow for the actor to sort of fill it in. And, you know, just reading the script, and I did get the script to read, there was so many very light and very sort of perky, happy, sunny characters in it. That I thought, boy, this needs an anchor. This needs a little different kind of an energy, or else it's just, the whole show is going to float away and it won't be believable, or as believable. So I thought, okay, I think this character is a test. You know, they're testing me out to see if I am aware of this and of what the show needs. And so that's how I prepared it and went in and performed it in the audition. You know, it was a little bit of a crank and, you know, playing against what, you know, the normal small town kind of friendly, you know, guy is. I just thought, boy, that would be redundant and kind of boring. You got to take risks in these auditions and, so that's what I did. And it worked out to my amazement, to my utter amazement. Yeah. So anyway, all right. So we're going to say goodbye, and I thank you so much, Amber. It was great having you on, and good luck with your renovations and your home.
Thanks.
Okay. So thanks for visiting us, and it was a pleasure having you. Okay.
Bye. Bye. Great meeting you.
All right. Good meeting you too. All right, everybody. That's it. We're going to wrap it up. Thank you for downloading in the numbers that you are. It's amazing. And we are astounded and are humbled before your loyalty to this wonderful show, which I am becoming increasingly obsessed with. I cannot wait. And it's my favorite night is when I get to watch another episode. And I'm resisting watching them every night because I don't, you know, it's like, I really want to, but I don't want to get too, I want to watch episode 5 and 6. And it's like, I'm kind of stomping around being a little moody sometimes. Like, why can't I watch another episode? Why am I limited to 4? Why do I have to watch episode 4? And I go to my wife and say, I want to watch 5. Why can't I watch 5? So I'm in like online support groups and
keep it slow because you can really forget what's happening.
Yeah. Darn it. Darn it. I boxed myself in 1 per week. But anyway, so we will be back next week with the Deer Hunters. So we'll see you then. Take care. Be safe. God bless. Don't forget, follow us on Instagram at @IAmAllInPodcast and email us at gilmore@iheartradio.com. Oh, you Gilmore fans, if you're looking for the best cup of coffee in the world, go to my website for my company, scottyp.com, scottyp.com, scottyp.com. Grade 1 specialty coffee.